In the studio, I've got Jackie Church. Good morning.
Morena.
So you are running for mayor, but you're also running, still running for your councillor seat as well?
Yes, that's right? Right.
That is right, yeah. And what is the council seat that you're a councillor for at the moment?
Sure. It's called Aroaki Tūkō at the moment, which takes the rural areas of the Ark and Otel on the Auckland border, just south of Waiuku to the river into the Tasman Sea, and also Tūkō and Pōkeno, Mercer, a bit of Mangatawhiri.
So that northern part of the district that we got added on a little while ago.
Yes, exactly, yeah. On the Auckland border. You know, just a real growth area. But now with all the, such a lot of growth, we've actually got another councillor ward in the new, in the north, and so it's the new ward's called Tūkō Pōkeno. It's really just the Tūkō Pōkeno and Mercer, and there's a big rural ward around it.
How did the that part of the country feel about being stuck onto the top of the Waikato district a few years ago?
I guess it's, you know, yeah, it's a good question actually, Aaron, thank you. But I think some people encapsulate new ideas and new opportunities really quickly.
Yeah.
And then you've got the stalwarts who remember the good old days. So I think it's a real mix between them. It's taken quite a long time, I think, to bed in that North Waikato into the whole of the Waikato region.
Yeah.
In terms of policies and things as well. So it's about culture as well as...
So there's a lot of bureaucratic stuff just to put in place.
Yes, it's
combining a... combining of two areas.
Sure, absolutely. And when I, in 2013 when I first started and decided, was asked to stand, I thought I really have to understand what I'm, the area that I'm going to represent or put myself forward, and went right around the border of it and knocked on 1,000 doors just to understand that Aroaki Tūkō and the implications of that ward. But one of the things that came out that was striking was all the government borders are the old Franklin borders, which is basically, if anyone knows the area, Mercer truck stop is on the motorway, and then you've got Meri Meri after that.
Yeah.
So halfway between those two, which is only a few kilometres, is the border for the territory, the government authority, so MST, Kāinga Ora, Education Department, Emergency Services. So that's really why in COVID we were really, really exceptionally affected, because we were Waikato Regional Council, Waikato District. However, all the government authorities looking after us were coming out of Auckland, and you know, such a lot going on in Auckland. By the time they got to our rural areas, I think it wasn't so much sustainability in terms of what I call
kind of
equality. I guess, yeah, I mean, you know, I say this with love to people, because everyone just is doing what they could. But I guess, you know, the equity in the rural areas, even Raglan, we're rural towns and we're rural countryside areas, and things that's important as healthcare, for example, we just want equity of service.
Yeah.
And it's really difficult.
I remember hearing too that people were kind of stuck in parts of our district that couldn't drive out of the little corner of it, just above, it was above Port Waikato, over that area there, was it? And they had to go into Auckland to get anywhere, and technically they weren't allowed to.
I guess
there was a lot of sneaky stuff like that. It was about the only thing you could do.
It was interesting. At one stage, there was a moving border. And you know, I think there's lots of criticism about whether even there was COVID and all of that, those sorts of things. I was surprised, but actually quite proud of how many people stuck to whatever rules were there.
Yeah.
And sure, and the rules did change, but sometimes we have to be flexible in our lives, and sometimes we need to work together and listen and move and be flexible. And sometimes it's hard for other people to be flexible. So, but I was surprised. One of the borders at one stage was actually beside my house, which cut off half of Port Waikato, and there's only like 300 people that live there. Another one was at the Ark, I think what you're recalling. So the Ark at Air Otel, their shopping centre, they've got no petrol, they've got no food, they've got nothing in the Ark. It's all farms and as such, but they were cut off from the Auckland Waiuku township, but they're also cut off from going into Tūkō. And so, but actually after about 5 days I was getting a lot more phone calls exponentially of people going, look, hey, it's 5 or 6 days and we're not allowed out, so you know, can you help us more?
Can you helicopter something in?
Yes.
So you were, like our councillor here, Lisa Thompson, was super busy during that time. I presume it sounded like you were as well.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. I mean, in that situation, and it's complicated because each organisation has delegations. So the police were also asking me to, in that situation, because they knew that the border wasn't quite right for the Ark people, that in theory, one Auckland Road surrounded them, so people were listening to that. But they didn't have the delegation, because the only delegation in COVID is the Ministry of Health, which is the right place. So they don't have the delegation to say, look, it's okay for you to sneak through to Waikato to get your groceries. But so they were kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place. And so they were asking people like me to, you know, cross my delegations to let people know, which is what I did on Radio New Zealand, to actually say to people, actually, this is just a bit of a glitch. This is what you can do, and try and help that situation. So I was incredibly busy, but I was really honoured to work with so many amazing people in the community that just really what Raglan's done as well is pulled together in the different groups. Mm. I'd actually already started to pull together a COVID response with local in partnership with local iwi, and actually I think we locked down on the Wednesday, and we're actually to have our first hui on Ngāi Te Arua Marae on the Saturday of the lockdown. So we just did that digitally, but we already had at that stage about 35 different groups. But to actually have it on the marae and start our hui there is a really important part of that mixture for us, or for me personally.
So a lot of this it doesn't strictly relate to being mayor, but it does talk to how different the parts of the district are, and like the experience that you're having up there is different to our. Well, the COVID experience is similar in some ways, but we all had our own unique solutions. But the issues that you're dealing with up there are really different to what we're dealing with down here. And Huntly's a completely different place. Tamahere is a different place. Is it a pretty unwieldy district to try to be mayor of? I guess I'm asking.
So good. Oh, that's a really big question, and we've only got a few minutes, I guess.
I know, you've got 30 seconds for that answer, please.
Okay. Simplistically speaking, and I don't mean this patronising, humans are humans, and the humanity of people is the same as what I found.
Yeah.
And that crosses basically people want the normal things. You know, they want to be loved, they want to be respected, they want their opinions to be heard, they want a safe place to live, they want, you know, meals, they want to feel of value and have their own mana. So there's lots of things around, and they want to feel a sense of community or to choose. And we're thankful to be in the democracy. It's not perfect. I'm really thankful that we're in New Zealand, where all the people of Waikato District Council and Aotearoa have the opportunity to have a lot of freedom that a lot of places don't have.
Yeah.
So I know what you're saying, but actually I see that the greater overall strategicness and underlying us is our humanity. In terms of things like, I actually live at Port Waikato right on the river, which I love the awa. I feel it's the right word, forgive me if it's wrong, for knowing a tanga to the awa, although I actually grew up in West Auckland. But the diversities of culture is really part of who I am as a person.
Yeah.
But I've actually been the ward councillor for 9 years out of my ward. And I chose really to continue in that ward because of the complexities, to really bed in and understand rural a lot more than I did.
Yeah.
Even though coming from a rural family, just what their actual issues were, and I heard you talking to Councillor Smith about some of those things for regional council, but also Tuakau, which is a DSR4 town, generally speaking, and it's really similar, exactly the same profile for culture, ethnicity, and underprivileged as Ngāi Te Arua and Huntly.
Okay.
So very similar towns.
Yeah.
But then taking Pokeno, when I first started 9 years ago, is about 500 people, so it's touching 5,000 now, and to grow with.
How do
and it's going to go to 12 or 15,000 or 20,000.
How do those 500 people feel? Because we don't like the feeling of rapid change, but it's nothing compared to what's happened to them.
Mm.
How do those original, are they still there or are they all gone? I'm out of here.
So in terms of that, the complexities of growth and the opportunities and the disadvantages, I think I've had a lot of experience in that. And that's why I say I don't see the dissimilarities of our communities. I see a lot of the similarities of aspirations and things. With Pokeno, again, I just have a deep respect for people and how they handle change, even if at the beginning it doesn't feel comfortable. And, we're doing it now. It's a lot of change going on and a lot of complexities. I would say it took them probably a few years, in my opinion, to kind of bed in, but also the people coming in new from other places, not just Auckland, from all over, took them a while to settle in as well. But I think that what we forget about in terms of there's a criteria for stress, you know, moving house, moving job.
Oh, yeah, tick the boxes and can't count them up.
Yeah, you can count them up.
Yeah.
What I found for me, I guess I try to figuratively speaking, put my arms around those people and understand those levels of stress, even if they didn't. After a couple of years, people bedded in. The people who had lived there before in Franklin, let's say, in the old Pokeno, some of them are the most active community people and wanting to bring them into their rural values and to welcome them with open arms. And one of them would be Helen Clockworthy, who owns Pokeno Bacon. So if you love bacon, that's a good bacon sauce.
Yeah.
And she had been criticised by some people, and she was horrified and really upset with that because she works, you know, along with many others from that old culture, to really encapsulate and embrace the new, and still doing that. So great kudos to them, and great inspirations.
Okay, let's do a little bit of a sideways step. Can you just tell us briefly a little bit about yourself, about, you know, like family life and work life, just so people can kind of get a feel for who you are?
Sure. So happily married, you know, mainly, you know, you can't, we always be happy, but no, we are. My husband says, don't tell him that I'm a lovely man, but he is a lovely man.
He's obviously a Kiwi guy.
Yes, Tōku Tāne, called Colin Church. And we have two adult children. I have a transgender daughter as well as a daughter by birth. And so, again, our family is involved in embracing the whole of humanity and LGBTQI. I think that's a really important part of understanding the diversity of humanity.
Yeah.
And that's been a really great journey for our family, so really pleased about that. I've always grown up in business. I'm from West Auckland. Came to Franklin, which now morphed into Waikato. Absolutely love the place. I feel like it's my home. We live as I said, Port Waikato in the Rawa. We have a small business ourselves, business degree. I've worked in multinational companies before that. So that's part of that. In terms of who I am is what I do. I was judged Franklin's finest person for my community service for that 60,000 people in Franklin, and an inspiration award, and which was quite overwhelming because it's quite a big thing in the north in that time. Mm. And it was hard for me to accept that. But understanding that, you know, collectively we can achieve a lot together, and as a small part of that, it's a good thing to have a collectiveness of unity and working for the fabric of our communities. So I've always worked in non-for-profit work. Money really doesn't drive us. We just comfortably live in our little shack at the beach.
Yeah.
But really about wanting to add value to our society the best way we can, and collectively with other people, and empower and lift other people up, really. And so I've done a lot of being treasurer of halls and on the board of Pukekohe Business Association for governance, and the ambulance trust, and various other things like that, lots of things. But I think the thing I really enjoy the most is actually initiating and moving and changing things, or inspiring people on new ideas. So I have an idea or hear an idea and support a person with that new idea to hatch it, or if I have an idea myself, check it out with a load of people and go, okay, let's just do this, and then start something new. Because I think we have to be always evolving and creating bridges between our silos, connecting people up within areas.
So a question for someone who's worked a lot in the private sector, coming to council where things move a lot more slowly. Mm-hmm. This is a conversation that I have with people all the time. Like, how was that? Was that quite an adjustment?
Sure. I've got a lot of grey hair that I have to cover. Yes. I'm really respectful of... How do I say this properly? I'm respectful of... But I also see that it probably comes off as critiquing council and its abilities. I'm respectful. I like to understand how things work and how things don't work so that we can fix processes. Yeah. You find a problem, what went wrong, why went wrong, and then you can fix it, and then it doesn't happen again, and you can move forward. So that's why that's how my brain works. Sometimes it comes along as maybe being critical, but it's not. The other side of it is understanding that council, our council really was from a rural, in my opinion, a rural ward, district council, fairly quiet, and and in the last less than 10 years, it's got a lot of growth, and it's had to morph into a dynamic, one of the most growth districts of the whole of New Zealand, and the staff are incredibly intelligent and smart and hardworking, and they've really encapsulated that growth and catch up and learnings of that. I thought at the beginning And that's, there's lots of opportunities to improve that, to make them more business-like,
yeah.
and to have a close tightening up of delivery of services and things. But every time there's a new idea or that they do take on board, they really run with it and they learn it and they keep it on it. So, yeah, I really, really inspired by that, because I think there's an opportunity as growth gets bigger, which I think it will, and faster, that the capability will exponentially grow.
So the people are always critical of council for being inefficient and slow. Is it the mayor's job or the CEO's job to make the council run more efficiently?
I feel that the council, led by the mayor, sets the tone of the whole organisation. I think that's the role and value-based role. We only employ one person, so therefore the values and things that are important to that council, and particularly the mayor, because they influence everybody. Everyone wants to make sure that politically that they're aligned with the mayor, right? Because that can be not so cool if you're not part of that. So people do that whether they, you know, whether they believe in all the things or not, as in a general sense. So in each party, you know, people have diverse ideas, but they'll stick with the council. So I think the mayor and the council sets that, and they choose or agree to the continued CEO or a new CEO, for example, who then sets those other parameters. I've found that there's a lot of close partnership between like chair people on committees and the mayor, and those talks, they're kind of getting the right direction with staff and operational general managers, and then with, you know, going to workshops with the whole of council, etc. So I think it's really important to have a really strong partnerships with the right people, and but really to be clear about what your aspirations are for the district based on what people want, need, and where the future's going. And I think that we need to really understand that in a really business-like way, more in, as local government's reforming.
So I asked this question of Axel Beck the other day, which is does a new mayor need a new CEO?
Yes, and it's hard to talk about particular people in some ways.
Because he's sitting there right now doing his job. Yeah, of course. Yeah,
yeah. But you know, it's a fair question. It's a, and hey, it's open. So Gavin has been the chief executive for, I think, 17 years, which is an incredibly long time in local government and in one in job, well, anyone for, to be in a role that long. But his contract's up in November next year. And council, if I was mayor, and I know I've heard this, the answers before too, council has to and should be very early, when they're together, be setting the parameters of how they see council to be, including the chief executive. Now, if that includes him reapplying for his job, good on him.
Well, that's not uncommon, is it? Like every few years you put the job out again?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I actually think it's a really good governance. You know, it's just like even when we have, whether it's, you know, in our board of trustees or around our own businesses, or whether it's in a hall committee, we should always look at what's our structure like. Is it working? How is it not working? How can we fix it? Or do we need any collective changes? Yeah. And that's healthiness.
Okay, well, let's talk about change, because all the ward boundaries, almost every ward boundary, in fact, I think every line has been redrawn except for the coastal line. So there's potential for big change in councillors, and I don't know. It's hard to kind of say it all in one go, but there's potential for big change coming up after this election, or is there? Do you agree with that?
Sure, there is a lot of change. Definitely, even the fact is,
and a new mayor.
Yes,
obviously, that's why we're talking to you.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So you're definitely getting a new mayor. You're definitely about half of our council will definitely change.
Yeah,
and. But also, none of us actually, I think we're all brave because we don't know what we're signing up for, because it's, I think it's the end of October that we're getting the, you know, first looks at what the local government reform's about.
Yeah, that's come up a lot during these interviews.
Yeah, so I think in some ways it's a brave new world. But I think council's actually used to change, and democracy. And same as that works in the chambers, where you've got a lot of people with a lot of experience. The new people coming in with a lot of experience, they might not, you know, they're all the ins and outs, but they've got their own businesses, they've got their own experience. We're going to have mana whenua in there with our two Māori ward councils. There's going to be a lot of change and opportunities for us to grow in, to again, in a healthy way. When you have something that's the same for too long, it can get stale, or is it as fit for purpose as it could be? And so change can be scary, but I think there's a lot of depth of talent and depth of experience that will still be in council, whoever the mayor is, and the people that are staying, as well as all the staff, and to support the new ones in. But the candidates I've seen are so inspiring, and it's like, wow, you know, I'm excited about those collective changes.
So do you think are there specific changes that you could, that you see, that think need to happen for the council?
Sure, there is. I've thought long and hard about it, I guess, because my background in business was always from the strategic marketing and business and creation of new parts of things. Yeah. So I thought long and hard about the business of council. So basically how I see it is, under the Local Government Act, our delegation, and we have every 10-year long-term plan, which we roll over every 3 years, and that's how we set your rates.
Yeah.
Right? So basically, Aaron, you'll give council $100, or you agree that we agree.
I think my rates are a bit higher than.
Yes. I'm trying to make the maths easy.
Okay, fair enough.
For all of us. So basically, we all legislatively and consultatively together, under that democracy, we decide the level of service. Do we mow the lawns 10 times in the park or just once a month? The level of service, the sort of services that we do. Do we do dog control and planning or not, and also the infrastructure projects. Now, some of those are uncontrollable, so developer-led, we kind of know roughly when they're doing them, but not exactly, but we have controllable infrastructure projects.
Yeah.
So you give me as council, your $100, and I say in that 3 years, on that date, or those years, I'm going to deliver those services and products or infrastructure. And systemically, in my opinion, I have to say these things like that, council hasn't done that as well as they could have. And at one stage, like 80%, particularly in my area, 80% of the late infrastructure projects that were controllable were in the North Waikato, for example.
Yeah.
So lots of budget lines, but this is the doey. Now, there could be lots of reasons, not just COVID. This is something that's been going on for a long time.
Yeah.
I drove the road into Whangaroa today, and some of the roads are really, really good quality compared to other roads, but some of it's, for the amount of traffic and the amount of speed and the narrowness of the road, definitely needs a lot of work, for example. Now, it's probably a line item. If it's on time, great, but it might not be. Down Te Ākau, you've got roads where half the road's fallen away, so we've only got one lane.
Across the harbour here.
And yes, yeah. In Te Ākau and around that area. But they're line items and there's cones around it, but how long since they've been fixed? Well, we want this council to, we're going to fix that on that time. We can't afford to fix the six of them, but we'll do one a year for 6 years. That would be the business-like way of doing it. But we don't I don't take you $100 in my business and then give you, $80 worth of service. I want to.
Right, yeah.
That's the difference.
And the 20 will come later.
Later or not. And, and sure, sometimes we can't deliver particular things or they have to be late. What I'd like to say is, okay, this is what we did deliver and this is what we didn't deliver, but they're still on the books and this is why we didn't deliver it, but they're still there and this is what's going to happen. And we're not very good at doing that, in my opinion.
Okay, all right.
It's about transparency and it's about value added and it's about being clear and also talking to people like they're adults and not being afraid. As we're an organisation, we're working together, things happen, things good, things bad. Let's work and have that transparency and work together, because you are valued clients of mine and my council and you're shareholders in the business.
Mm. Okay, are you on a community board up there? Like Elisa Thompson's on the Raglan Community Board?
I was in my first triennium.
Okay, so something we talk about a lot here.
Oh, sorry, I wasn't as a member.
Yeah.
No, I went straight to councillor.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, sorry, yeah. But, as in the councillor is delegated to the community board.
Sure. Yep.
Yeah. So we talk a lot about the powers of the community, well, the non-existent powers of the community board.
Yes.
And what a lot of people would like to see, and this is a power that the mayor has to delegate powers to boards and committees and things like that, the possibility of community boards having an actual say about things. Like they work on a relationship basis and they recommend to council and things like that. What we've found is that the local knowledge is a real key to making good decisions. And I keep saying this, it's not to criticise the staff. They don't live here. They don't have that on-the-ground knowledge. So are you in favour of delegating powers to community boards? I mean, I'm not talking about going the whole hog like Thames Coromandel District Council necessarily did, but, yeah, talk about that before we go because we've run out of time.
Sure, the time goes fast. In the past 9 years, there's been lots of conversations around whether what community boards' role is, and I haven't agreed with that. Where they're doing what they've been doing, my vision would have been to have increased their powers, and to utilise and for them to develop in delegations where they need to. Definitely, yeah. The different community boards have different capabilities, and some of them may not want to go down that track. But yeah. Definitely, Raglan is an example. But even the Tuco, Only Fero Tuco one. Which I encourage to split into a rural and a town one from a mixed one, they definitely have capability. They helped with the public toilet, for example. But you know better what you need in your town and how. And so we should be starting to do those things definitely. I think the only concern I have is there's a difference between governance and just making decisions about how something's done and the operational doing. And I think there'll be a lot of just unpacking and how that works and
I
how much
more
work
staff,
it is.
I think you need a staff, like Thames Coromandel, they have a town manager, I think. That might not be the right phrase, but you get the idea.
Mm.
Like a staff member dedicated to keeping things going in that area. And I think that may be required. Have you got a comment
definitely
on that?
Yeah, and we've talked a lot about that up in the North Waikato because there's so much growth that a town manager, Waiku, has got one as well. Fantastic roles, people who work with everybody in the communities and particularly with their boards. So the short answer is yes, we should be empowering our boards, but actually there's the bigger question I personally think is this local government. Our New Zealand, 88 or 89% of our revenue is centralised into central government.
Yeah,
and local government are pushed because we have to act on the policies, like they say, yeah, even around climate change, for example, or waste management,
so
with ratepayer money.
National legislation
tells
you what to do.
It tells us what to do.
Yeah.
And some really important things. They'll sign a treaty, which we all agree on, sustainability, climate change, reduction of waste management. But our less than 85,000 people in our Waikato District Council have to then pay for that policy to be in place. And so it's squishing and pressurising the services and products that we can, and things that we do from that. Now, we are the most centralised revenue country in the OECD countries.
Right.
So the OECD countries have learnt, and that to me personally is about too much power. No, it doesn't matter what party you're on, it's like power and control of the money.
Yeah.
I'm not completely revolutionary to turn things completely upside down, but until we actually find what these other OECD countries have done, which is to empower the people below them who know their areas best and give them the money and resources and legislator, the people to support, I think we won't make step changes forward and we'll keep doing the same old, same old.
Yeah.
And that's the concern I have for council, where people are worried about change and they want stability. But actually, we aren't in a stable time when we need to be a little bit more flexible and embrace a few new ideas. Otherwise, we're going to get the same results.
Okay. All right, folks, we've been talking to Jackie Church, who's a councillor from the northern part of the district, and it's vaguely up there somewhere in our heads, running for mayor. And can you give us your 30-second statement on why people should vote you in as mayor?
Thank you. 30 seconds.
Ooh. Yeah, I know. I've set the challenge.
Yes, because I'm in one of the most northern parts of the Waikato district. So as an example, my vision is I'm not going to live up there. I'm going to be in my caravan, tooting around and camping around in the district. I think to be in one place too much time would be not a good thing. So I'm actually excited about living within the communities and working with communities and finding ways of, just hearing what their voices are on a one-on-one basis. So that's just one different way of managing being a mayor from a place.
Yeah.
It's not really about how I would do it. I just believe in the collectiveness of people. I like to take the ego out of all politics, practical, common sense, open, honest, approachable, inspire people to be the leaders and the best that they can be. I love it when people succeed. And I really believe in democracy and the collectiveness, or what you call synergy of people.
Yep.
And I think we can have the debate within debate, which is healthy within in democracy in the council chambers. But we can also have a much more modern way of doing it, which I see in your Raglan. You have healthiness, you have debate, but you have a healthy, open debate and collectiveness, and then you find a way of going forward together, and then you go that way.
Okay. Yeah. Yep. All right. Thank you for coming in, Jackie.
Thank you.
And folks, don't forget, we've got the Meet the Candidates afternoon this Sunday, 2 o'clock here in the Town Hall, and Jackie will be here along with, I believe, everyone you could possibly vote for will be in the Town Hall on the afternoon. That's the end of the show for the day and for the week. Thanks for tuning in. I'll see you next week.